Okay, Isaiah chapter 3. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us now as we approach this book, as we see from our perspective some history about Judah and Jerusalem. From Isaiah's perspective, it was some prophecy that was fulfilled shortly thereafter. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us recognize what's happening in our nation as a result of what happened to Judah and Jerusalem. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Israel, when Judah and Israel is put together, they are shortly going to become the chief of nations. And Israel is a nation that is a demonstration to all nations what happens to a nation when it when that nation has a general attitude, follow God or at least obey God, and or the opposite, where they have a general attitude of following Baal or some pagan god, what happens to them. Chapter 3 of Isaiah reveals a couple different areas, what happened to Judah before Judah was destroyed. Remember that Judah was conquered by Babylon. Remember that King Nebuchadnezzar surrounded Jerusalem in a siege for a year and a half, 18 months, and people were starving to death. Okay, and so this is giving some of the occurrences that took place in Judah prior to God destroying them. And so what this reveals is every nation follows the same pattern of Judah and Israel. If that nation obeys God, generally speaking, that nation is blessed. If that nation does not obey God, then that nation is cursed. Okay, a modern example is Haiti. Haiti is a country that has dedicated itself as officially to Satan, but yet on the same island is another country called Dominican Republic, but yet why do we hear so much chaos, so much poverty, so much mess in Haiti? Okay, and when Haiti was discovered by Christopher Columbus, it was a pristine area where they had fruits and vegetables and everything grown everywhere, and it wasn't because the Europeans came in and destroyed it. It's because Satan came in and destroyed it, because the people turned their back on God. Yet Dominican Republic don't have half the problems that Haiti does. Same island. And the reason why is one is more biblical in its orient, in its basic ideas of government structure, than the other one. So in chapter 3 of Isaiah, what does it show? In the beginning of it, it shows what happens to men of character in that country. And then when we get down to chapter 16, it shows the average common individual walking the street and what they look like. You know, walking Christmas tree, or they lost their tackle box or something. Okay, this is predicted in the Bible. There's nothing new under the sun. Americans think they're so civilized, yet they're going back to African ways, sticking bones in their nose, you know, and stuff in their lips and everything. And we're getting more uncivilized. It's either back to the Bible or it's back to the devil. Or back to the jungle. Okay, chapter 3, verse 1. For behold, the Lord of hosts, doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread, and the whole stay of water. Okay, so the daily food rationings will be dropping. And then notice the people. The mighty man. The man of war. The judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, captain of 50, honorable man, the counselor, the cunning artificer, the eloquent orator. These will be men of character. What you'll see is men of character, men of high integrity, will start be falling by the wayside. They'll be dying off. Men who are put in positions of authority will be low-life scumbags. They will be not men of character. They will not be men of principle. They will not be like a George Patton or MacArthur. back in World War II days. They would not be like the soldiers of America back in World War I and in World War II. I mean, you had good men back then. When patriotism for your country was honest and true patriotism. Where back in the Depression days, the average mentality of people was, okay, I can't make a living, but one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to riot in the streets. I'm going to try to survive. I may be a bum or a hobo, but I'm going to try to survive and hopefully, you know, try to work for a day's wage if somebody would put me to work. Nowadays, and when the money goes down, it is going to be mass chaos. It is going to be hell on earth, that's for sure. Why? Because people don't have character anymore. If you doubt that, ask anybody that works at a fast food joint, any manager, trying to keep the person, the people employed, trying to keep them to come to work on time. It's just the turnover rate of McDonald's, Taco Bell, all these places is just phenomenal because people don't have character anymore. You see, and the mighty man, it says, he's gone, he's out. You don't see men like Andrew Jackson anymore. Where Andrew Jackson said to the bankers when he was the president, I'm going to rout you out. You are a den of thieves. And he refused to renew the bank charter so that they could print money out of thin air. Probably the last great president we had, Andrew Jackson. That was number 7. You see, and everyone since then, you know, Reagan was a good actor. People thought Reagan was, you know, quite a good president, you know, conservative principles. The government grew like crazy under his administration. President Reagan put the first ambassador to the Vatican. I mean, there was so much going on. He was an actor, good actor. Okay, and I don't think any president really calls the shots. I think they're all puppets. They're told what to do. Okay, and obviously people say, man, how did we get somebody like an Obama? We got what we deserved. That's what we got. For years, preachers have picked and choose parts of the Bible, what they want to preach about, what they want to obey, what they want to talk about. And now the judges do that in the courts. They pick and choose the rules they want to go by. And just like the politicians pick and choose parts of the Constitution they want to obey. There's no difference. The mighty man, he's gone. I mean, the Robert E. Lees, the General Shermans, you know, Jeb Stuart, Stonewall Jackson, those men are gone. What do we get? A Powell. You know, that guy's a joke. And these guys are bought and paid for. Mighty man, the man of war, he's gone. The true man of war, the judge. The judges in the courtrooms are jokes. Just absolute jokes. I mean, they do as they wish, and it doesn't matter what's going on. The prophet. What's his name down there? Scott Pruitt sent me something that what's his name down there in Texas is doing now. Joel Osteen. He's putting Korans in the pew now. And what's he calling it, Jen? Rick Warren? Okay, that was Rick Warren. Putting Korans in the pews, and he's called it Christron? Christlam. Something like that. Where he's saying Islam and Christianity are, you know, one and the same in many ways. That's Rick Warren. You ain't a kidding. The prophet. Okay, the prudent. The prudent is a person who studies. A prudent individual is, it rhymes with student, and that's a man who's, what people would call a scholar. Now, in the Bible, the word scholar is found 2 times, and in the Bible, a scholar is actually a student. School. It says in Malachi 2, verse 8, the master and the scholar. So the master is somebody that's mastered a subject. Okay, where the scholar is the student. And if somebody says, are you a scholar of the Bible today? Most people say, oh no, I'm not a scholar of the Bible. Well, you should be. You should be a student of the Bible. Now, are you going to master it? Obviously not. Now, today when people think of the word scholar, they think of the master, the guy, the teacher. But scholars today or masters today, they're really not masters. They don't study. I mean, I hate to name names here. No, I don't hate to name names. Jack Skop has his son, Ken Skop. The kid's not even 30 years old to be a great Bible scholar. He's on the radio, you know, where he's got, you know, theology and all things. Theology without apology. I don't even know if the kid can hold the Bible right side up. He doesn't know what a real Bible is from their own definition. They've never seen an inspired copy of the Bible from their own definition. Because their definition says that only the originals are inspired. And he's not even 30 years old and he's an expert? Now, you know, I wanted the brightest, sharpest knife in a drawer at 30, but I knew I was no expert. I mean, when you have people, one of the translators of the King James Bible, he had a hobby of every spring to take an entire month of that spring and learn another language. The guy knew 40 languages. I mean, it's just phenomenal. William Tyndale, they said that he could speak Hebrew like it was his mother tongue. You can't get that these days. You know, when a student goes down to Pensacola PBI down there, I think they have Greek 3 years, maybe 2 years. 2 years Greek, 1 year of Hebrew. That's not even coming close to touching those languages. And some of these guys will take a Strong's course, look at the Strong's definition in the back of the Greek and Hebrew, and they think they're experts. They don't know this stuff. People don't spend time, hours and hours studying books and everything. They spend hours and times on the computer. So the prudent, the one that really searches things out and studies, that's a rare, rare person in these days. The ancient, okay, the elderly, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man. The honorable man, when you write a congressman and say the honorable so-and-so, you know, the judge, your honor, they're not honorable people. You know, in Washington, D.C., in Congress, I could say that I respect one guy, maybe two. And in the Senate, now one guy, and that's his son. I mean, they're just not honorable people. We got a Republican in our state, been elected over and over and over and over again, a guy named Lugar. That guy is no more a Republican as I am a monkey on Mars. That guy is such a liberal, it's downright pitiful. And when you get to, if you go to walk the halls of Congress and go walk in these guys' rooms, they'll tell you to your face that they, you know, may or may not like your thing, but if they do like it, they'll tell you to your face, but they won't say that in public. They're not honorable people. Men of honor are rare. The counselor, a true wise counselor, an old sage, as they say. Now, most counseling today is nothing but amateur psychology. In fact, many of the counseling classes in the Christian schools, the Christian colleges, will be studying Freud. And they'll talk about the id and the ego and the superego. When you take psychology classes in the Christian school, they're studying about the pagan psychologist. You say, how do you know that? Because I remember taking a course out there at Grace College. And I'm sitting there listening, superego, id, ego, what is that? You know, and then they'd try to describe you this stuff. And what a psychologist or psychiatrist is somebody who's trying to analyze you spiritually without God or the Bible. And they can't do it. It cannot be done. Counselor, Dr. Phil. What a joke. You see, these guys are not counselors. the cunning artificer, craftsmanship, true, honest craftsmanship is a rare thing in these days, where a person takes hours and hours to master something. Modern art is a joke. Any of our kids can take some paint and throw it on a piece of canvas, call it art, take it to a school and say, I'm a communist, and they automatically will brand it off as a classic. That's what Picasso was. The guy couldn't paint or draw. I mean, Norman Rockwell, there's some art. Took time to do those things. The eloquent orator, like an R.G. Lee years ago. Okay, and so orators nowadays are more, you're okay, I'm okay, we're all okay, and then we'll leave and we'll be okay. A true orator, somebody that really knows his subject. Okay, and then here's the replacements. Okay, the replacements of this, I will give children to be their princes. That's what we got in the White House. An empty suit. He's a kid. He's never been tested in his life. He's never done anything in life. He's never worked in a private job, private enterprise. He hadn't done anything. He's a child, mentally. He's a child to be their princes, and babies shall rule over them. Babies shall rule over them. Children are the youth. Most churches nowadays, what's running the church is the youth. The youth groups. That's what the churches want. Well, we want the youth group. Granted, that we're not against that. We're not opposed to that. But the youth need to listen to the older, the elderly. And recognize that's where the wisdom's at. Wise is a young man who listens to the ones older, because they've been through it. Okay, and so children to be their princes, babies shall rule over them, people shall be oppressed, everyone by another, and everyone by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. Okay, look at the average child when you go in a grocery store. Look how they behave towards their parents. Look how they behave towards adults. Okay, that's a sign of judgment. It's a sign a nation is falling apart. You know, the old saying is a good saying, children are meant to be seen, not heard. That's a good saying. You see, and so, verse 6, when a man shall take hold of his brother of the house of his father, saying, thou hast clothing, be thou our ruler, and let this ruin be under thy hand. So they just grab anybody off the street and say, you be the boss. Rahm Emanuel. I mean, these guys are so arrogant, and they just get right in there. What happens? It says in verse 7, in that day shall he swear, saying, I will not be an healer, for in my house is neither bread nor clothing. Make me not a ruler of the people. Guy says, don't put me in there, for Jerusalem is ruined. And Judah is fallen because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord to provoke the eyes of his glory. There's the basic reason. Psalms 9, verse 17, all nations that forget God shall be turned into hell. Isaiah says Jerusalem is ruined. Now he said this, probably 100 years before it actually took place, officially, when Babylon came in. But the handwriting was already on the wall. Verse 9 at the paragraph mark, it says, the show of their countenance doth witness against them. Now that's quite a statement if you think about that. The show of their countenance doth witness against them. And the idea with that is, when you get around people that lived a hard life, a wicked life, there's many, many a time when I visit those men in the jail, and if you would look at us and try to guess our ages, him versus me, the guess most of the time would be I would be 10 years younger than him, but in most cases I was 10 years older than them. Why? Because sin wears you out. It ruins the body. It is on the face. You could see it all over their countenance, all over their face. It can't be hid. The way of the transgressor is hard was written in the Proverbs. It says, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They brag about their sin. A true believer doesn't brag about his sin. Guys will say in the locker room, boy, I scored last night. Bragging about their sin. Sodomites, I'm gay and God loves me too. Proud about their sin. They declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. That's judgment on a nation. Never seen it, but I saw that advertisement where some show called Californication. Another show, The Sin City. You got movies where I've seen on a billboard, Wicked. I mean, they're not hiding it now. It's put right out in front. They're bragging about their sin. They don't hide it. It's right in front of us, right in broad daylight. Okay, in verse 9 it says, woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. Very sad thing. Say ye to the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Okay, remember on the Old Testament covenant, it's not saved, it's righteous. Okay, it's wicked versus the righteous. So the righteous, when you live right, then the judgment is not felt as tough, as hard. It's going to be felt because of society as a whole. But a man reaps what he sows, good and bad. Verse 11, he says, woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him. For the reward of his hand shall be given him. Okay, so both of those, reap what you sow. You sow to the flesh, you reap corruption. You sow to the spirit, you reap life everlasting. Okay, verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors. Okay, and this is gonna get more and more evident as children learning actual incantations from Harry Potter. They're getting spiritual power. They will learn how to use these things against their teachers at school, against their parents. Children will be their oppressors. Women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of the paths. Women rule over them. Nancy Pelosi. Now you got some women that are conservative. People say, would you vote for a woman, you know, if she's a conservative? Well, if she's got more manhood than the other fella, yes. Which a lot of times they do, sadly. Sometimes women tend to be more spiritual. When they see the men aren't doing right, they kind of step in. It's between them and God. Okay, but, you know, the news media, they got their way now. They got a black guy in the president. Next, they're going to push for a gal, some woman. Then they'll want to push a black woman. That's the pattern. Nothing new under the sun. You can see they're doing it. It's a constant conditioning. Condition you, condition you, condition you. You know, I know somebody that works for the DNR or something like that in a federal position, and he said, what we have to put up with is just absurd. Offense, people getting offended. He said this one guy gave a little video and he said he was he was weight challenged. In other words, he was fat. Okay, and so he gets on, I was made fun of because I was chunky as a kid and that hurt my feelings. And people have feelings. This is talking to adults. And people have feelings and gays have feelings too and we shouldn't make fun of them. I mean, and you got to sit and listen to that stuff? That's what the federal government's cramming down people's throats. You see, and it says, women rule over them. My people, they which lead thee, cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. Verse 13, the Lord standeth up to plead and standeth to judge the people. Okay, standing up like a sentence, getting ready to deliver a sentence. The sentence will be judgment. The Lord will enter into judgment with the ancients of the people and the princes thereof, for ye have eaten up the vineyard, and the spoil of the poor is in your houses. How do they get that? How do the princes get the spoil of the poor? That's called taxes. Legalized theft. Ye've eaten up the vineyard. I mean, we're starting to see it just starting to unravel. Wisconsin, the Democrats leave the state. Indiana, the Democrats leave. I hope they stay away. Just leave. Get out of here. And the parasites are screaming because the host doesn't want to give them health care benefits. And the parasites are just screaming on this stuff. Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio's coming up. And these guys are getting together. All 50 states are going to protest. And they'll talk about having blood in the street, and the news media won't say a thing about it. And, you know, it's like this country's got worms. It's got parasites. It's infested with maggots. You see? And so these people are screaming about this stuff. You see, where the federal government can print money out of thin air, but the state governments can't. So they're going to be forced to declare bankruptcy. But I'll bet you anything, if you go up to Wisconsin and go to the Secretary of State and ask about the confidential annual financial report, comprehensive financial report, CAFR, I'll bet you they got billions in there. I remember years ago, we had a governor that said Indiana was about bankrupt, and we had $30 billion in that report. It's an account, it's a secret banking account that they don't tell people about. But yet, if you ask for the ledgers or the balance sheet for that, then they're forced to give it to you when you go into the office. Gene Zimmerman asked about that up in Wisconsin years ago, and he asked for all the ledgers, and the lady looked at him and said, "You want all the ledgers?" He said, "Yeah, I like that." She said, "Do you realize it's going to be 4 feet thick of paper?" And at that time, Wisconsin had $70 billion in that account where they could run the entire state without paying taxes. But they don't tell people about that report. Gary, every municipality has them. Every state. It's not a hidden account, but it's an account that they just don't publish. It's offshores and stuff like that. It's called a CAFR, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. That's what it's called. Okay. Do you know what Indiana's is right now? Yes. Okay. And at that time, it was $30 billion. Phenomenal. Okay, that's 14, 15. What mean ye that ye beat my people to pieces and grind the faces of the poor, saith the Lord God of hosts? Okay, that's the... Who's he talking to there in verse 14? The princes. The princes, all they know what to do is give me, give me, give me, give me. The tax structure. At the county level, at the local level, the county level, the state level, the fed level, they're not going to quit. They're going to keep hammering it. At the gas pump, you know, there's not going to be a quit on this. They're going to keep pushing it and pushing and pushing it until the people scream. And then they'll back off and then push some more. And the people scream and then they'll back up and then they'll push some more. You see, and that's how the process works until finally they just get rid of the people. Okay, verse 16. Verse 16 describes the average day individual walking down the street, what they have on their body, what they look like physically. Now, anybody that knows anything about animals, especially if the animal has fur or whatnot, or like a cat, you know a cat is sick when the fur doesn't look healthy. And so if you translate that to people where their fur don't look real hot, you're dealing with something sick. Verse 60, moreover the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty. Now notice he's looking at the gals. You know a country's wicked when the gals are wicked. Men are always wicked, but when the girls are wicked, you got a really wicked nation. The daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes. Wanton eyes, eyes that wander, looking around, looking, seeing who's looking at them, looking and lusting. Okay, stretched forth necks. Now, they haven't done that one yet. There's some tribes down in Africa where they think it's beautiful for a lady to have a long neck. I don't know if they evolved from giraffes or whatnot. And so what they do is they take these rings and stick it in their, put it in their neck, and they keep stacking a ring so their head stretches up further and they get a real long neck. Now, I haven't done that one yet in our country. Maybe if we start a fad, we can get it going, you know, start, you know, buy some stock and some rings and a company. Okay, then it says, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tingling with their feet. Okay, so you can see they got stuff on their body. Now, when people put, the more they put on their body, that's the more that they like to draw attention to themselves, and that's what spirits do. Look at me, look at me, look at me. Now, I know a little kid will do that, but we need to grow up out of that. When people want to call attention to their flesh, that's demonic. Verse 17, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts. Now, he's going to do that in prison, captors of war. In the day, the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, their cauls, their round tires like the moon. Now, the round tires, not the Dunlap's disease that we older men get. Okay, it's funny, the tires, in Africa, the tires, what they used to do, they'd call this necklacing. Mandela would brag about this. What necklacing was, you know, Mandela, the great big hero that Congress clapped for, this dirty, rotten, thinking murder. Necklacing was when they'd take a fella, usually obviously black fella because they're down there, take a tire, stick around his neck, douse him with gas, and torch him. That's necklacing. And then they'd dance around him and poke him to death until he dies. That's what Nelson Mandela and his crowd called necklacing. Boy, what a tough, difficult, hard way to die. What's on their bodies? Chains, verse 19, chains, bracelet, mufflers. Now, I forget what that is, but that's not a car muffler. Okay, bonnets, the ornaments of the legs, the headbands, the tablets, the earrings, the rings, nose jewels. Body piercing is not new. This is old. Nose jewels, changeable suits of apparel, the mantles, the wimples, and the crisping pins. Wimples. What's that? That's a sissy zit. I don't know what that is. That's a wimple. Okay, crispy pins, glasses. Okay, the glasses, the fine linen, the hoods, and the veils. Now, you see, in 1 Peter chapter 3, this is a passage often used by the holiness people, and they will say that it's a sin, it's wrong to have any sorts of jewelry. Okay, and this is the passage they use. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 and 4. Now, the Bible doesn't say you can't have jewelry itself, rings, watches, you know, necklaces, stuff like that. It's talking about an overabundance of them, an adornment of them. 1 Peter 3, verse 3, talking about the ladies, it says, whose adorning let it not be that of outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair and of the wearing of gold or of the putting on of apparel. But let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is the sight of God of great price. Now, they say, you see, you're not to have the adorning of the hair or the wearing of the gold. What about the last one? The putting on of apparel? You mean you're supposed to be naked as a jaybird? You see, you know that's not what it's saying. It's, you can see the key is the word adornment. It's when people look like Christmas trees. You know, I can, you know, Years ago, often maybe a sailor would get a tattoo. He might get one tattoo on his arm. When he gets to be a grandpa, you know, maybe the little kid pulls, "Grandpa, what's that?" "Oh, something I did years ago." Well, can you imagine some of these people nowadays? Some of these people, they don't even need to wear a shirt. It looks like they got a shirt tattooed on them. I can imagine a little kid grabbing one of the, you know, of course, those type of people, you know, they get up to old age. They ain't going to make it old age. But, "Grandpa, why do you got a road map on your arm?" But it's just amazing what people put on their body and the pain that it does to do that. Man, that don't tickle when they do that stuff. Verse 24, "It shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell there shall be stink. Instead of a girdle, a rent. And instead of a well-set hair, baldness. Instead of a stomacher or a girding of sackcloth, and a burning instead of beauty. Thy men shall fall by the sword of thy mighty men in war. And her gates shall lament and mourn, and she being desolate shall sit upon the ground. No more walking and mincing and bragging and arrogance. When God humbles a nation, boy, does he humble them. And he's done it time and time again in the past. And may God have mercy in our country. May he have mercy." Okay, that's the end of chapter 3. Any questions, what we covered? Comments?